Let me ask you a question. What if there was someone who kept a log of every single thing you did every minute of the day? Would that concern you? Well, what if I told you that's exactly what happens every time you go online? Your internet provider, like AT&T or Verizon, is allowed to store logs of every website you've ever visited and can legally sell this data to anyone. With today's enthusiasm for cancel culture, that's why I use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN reroutes your internet connection through their secure server so your internet provider can't see or log into what you're doing online. They were the first major VPN provider to engineer all of their VPN servers to run on RAM only. This makes it impossible for their VPN servers to store any data, including logs of any ExpressVPN customer. It's no wonder that CNET and The Verge named ExpressVPN the number one VPN in the world. Stop letting people keep logs of what you do online. Visit expressvpn.com/matter. Find out how you can get 3 months free. That's expressvpn.com/matter. Hey, it's John. I want to share with you a little bit about Chuck Norris's morning kick. I started taking it every morning when I get up and I feel great. It's a new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. It tastes good and gives me the energy I need to start the day, both physically and mentally. It also gives me that initial boost I need without the sugar crash that orange juice gives me. Many of us don't eat enough green vegetables, and this is a good way to remedy that. I know I've noticed a difference, and maybe you will too. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris today. We are live now on the Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm your host, John Harris. I'm sorry it's 10 minutes late. I am having some issues with my computer. I got to figure this out because the last few days it keeps freezing on me and I don't know why. So it froze on me right as I was about to start. And so that's what happened. So pray that it doesn't freeze during the live stream. So I'll be looking at it, of course, later tonight. But with that said, we're going to jump right into it. I want to talk about what's going on right now in PCA circles. I'm sure that if you are a member of the Presbyterian Church in America and you're active online on social media and you're in chat groups, all those private chat groups, I'm sure are abuzz right now with a lot of things. But one of the things is this attempt to, I think it's smear Zach Garris, who's been on the podcast before. And in fact, we had him on, I want to say a month or two ago. And we were talking a little bit about this whole David French thing. So I'm going to start from the beginning. We're going to start at the David French stuff, but then I'm going to get to the current attempt to more or less cancel Zach Garris, Pastor Zach Garris. And it should be good. I think it's going to be a good podcast. It is not the podcast I was expecting to do today. I was going to do a news roundup. I have a number of things saved up that I wanted to talk about from various denominations and just Christian news. And we'll get to that next week at this point, because I thought, you know, I really want to talk about this. This is important. And Zach has been a good friend as far as, I don't live in the same state as him. I don't see him in person. I think I met him twice in person. But as far as even the book, I have it sitting here somewhere. There it is. Even my books, Christianity and Social Justice, Zach's the one that published that. And I asked him to do it and didn't really give him a very long window to help me with that. And he was great. I mean, he's someone I can call up and ask him about changes if I need to make them. And it's just, I don't know, he's a nice guy and what's happening to him isn't really right. And I agree with Jimmy Starfish. Zach Garris did nothing wrong. And not in an absolute sense, because we all have sins, but what they're trying to do, get him on isn't wrong. And that's what I want to talk about today. So we'll go through all of that. Let's jump into it and just start the story time. Okay. So we'll start the story off with maybe 2 months ago. It was announced, the PCA announced they were going to have a special panel on, it was on political and social topics and trying to make sure that I'm trying to remember the name of the actual panel. I can't remember the name of it. I remember the theme of it. It was attempting to de-escalate the politicalization of the church. And David French was one of the panelists who was going to participate in that. Long story short, David French is after it was announced and there were some conservatives who were upset about this, David French was, I assume, disinvited. So the panel does not exist. It's not going to happen. They're going to do, I think, a worship time or something. They have some other activity that they're going to do at the PCA General Assembly. And to summarize, much of this came down to the fact that, you know, David French is not, it's not just that he's a leftist, which I think he's proven at this point that he is, and that he's subversive, which, yeah, he is. It's that he left the PCA and him and his wife essentially trashed the PCA. So they've said all kinds of things against the PCA, and then they're invited back. And it's not just that he leans left, but he's like really left. Like he was, you know, supported the Marriage Equality Act. I think that was what it was called. And that was like a year ago, right? That wasn't ancient history. He's the one, and it keeps coming up, that he talked about how drag queen story hours a blessing of liberty. I mean, this guy is way out there. And he's not the kind of person that you would normally put on a panel that's for the PCA, as I understand it. And that's why I think it was a good choice to, they should have never really had him to begin with, but they decided not to have him. And, you know, of course, the thing about this is the left starts screaming cancel culture when this happens, right? Every time conservatives get a victory to roll back some, even if it's a little bitty victory, to try to just roll back a little bit of all the negative stuff that progressives have infused into our associations, denominations, and organizations in Christianity, they're called on the carpet for cancel culture attempts. I remember with Ed Litton, this was a thing, right? You're trying to cancel him by bringing up his plagiarism issues. J.D. Greer had a big deal about this, that conservatives are just as guilty of cancel culture. They're cancel culture people too. And I've tried to explain this before, but the term cancel culture, it's like the term woke, right? It's a newer term. It can be used a little loosely, but it was popularized in a context in which people were losing their jobs, their livelihoods, the ability to feed their family. They were trashed with no opportunity for really any kind of redemption. That's what cancel culture has meant, that you're going to bring down the hammer of the regime approved narrative onto those who disapprove of that narrative and make it so they are outcasts in polite society. So they cannot participate anymore. They will be on the fringes, right? That's the whole point of cancel culture. It's not just canceling someone from an event. It's not just saying we don't agree with a certain position that someone holds, or we don't think they should be in a position of authority because they disagree with our statement of faith or something like that. That's not really cancel culture. Cancel culture has an intent to destroy the person. It has an intent to prevent that person from having any influence. And I would say most of the time, even in the future. And I think most importantly, cancel culture is fused with the arm of state-approved and regime-approved. So, and when I say regime, I'm not talking about just the Biden administration, but we're talking about what's accepted in the media and in academia and other places of influence, education, that the narrative that they seem to be all on board with, and they do seem to work in lockstep, don't they? It's using their influence to crush that person, right? Hopefully we're clear on that. Hopefully I don't have to explain it anymore. Maybe there are pieces on this that have been written. I just haven't read them, but that's what we're talking about when we're talking about cancel culture. So what happened to David French? Was he canceled from an event? Sure. Is it cancel culture? Not really. It's more of a recognition that David French doesn't fit here. David French, by his own words and admission, doesn't fit in the PCA. And he left because And Zach and I actually talked about this in the podcast. Him and his wife were saying things like there's all these racists and neo-Confederates and so forth, deplorables in the PCA. And so it's not a fit for them. So, you know, this is the David French that was canceled from an event. This wasn't an attempt to destroy, and it didn't have the effect of destroying David French's ability to feed his family, to work, to operate. He more than has that ability because he works for, he's an op-ed writer from the New York Times, right? I mean, there's really nothing the PCA can do to harm him anyway, in that sense. There wasn't any bringing a regime-approved narratives down on him because he was in a violation of them somehow in a way that would make him, give him the scarlet letter, you know, for years to come. Nothing like that. And that, though, is what's happening or starting to happen with Zach Garris right now. And so I'll explain that as the program unfolds, what I'm seeing. So leave your comments, leave your questions in the comm box on Twitter or Facebook or YouTube. Can't do it on Rumble, but on those three you can. And we already have some comments coming in. We have Civisly, I don't know, Minded, saying, I have a PCA re and leaving for Georgia on Monday, and not only sent a strong letter to Brian Chappell, but also made a video about it on my channel. I'm not sure if this is re David French or what. Brian Chappell was the one who made the announcement. David French is no longer coming to the PCA event. David French, Ryan Bice says, was not even charging the PCA. It was simply a single PCA employee who made a very bad decision. And David French was not canceled by the PCA. The event was canceled. Oh, that's a good point, too. I didn't even think about that. So that is true. David French wasn't singled out and saying, well, we're going to still do this, but David French is out. They actually just canceled the whole event. So that's a really good point that some people might not think that makes a huge difference. I think it kind of does, at least somewhat. Now, maybe that the intention was because of all the controversy surrounding David French. I don't know. But cancel culture is not boycotting. It's targeted harassment campaigns, gay ops, and doxing. So, yeah, I would say that is stuff that goes along with cancel culture, for sure. It's not just disagreement over something. That's the point I'm trying to make. Okay. Oh, ruling elder. Ruling elder is R-E. I wasn't sure what that meant. Okay, so a PCA ruling elder. Okay, so if you're in the PCA, I'd love to hear from you. Leave a comment of what you think about what we're going to talk about on this particular podcast. So I explained the French thing. I think in all the detail, we need to explain it. It's not the main part of this, but the only reason I'm bringing it up is because a number of people have told me in the PCA that they think that the left wing of the PCA wants their pound of flesh. They're mad that this happened, that conservatives were able to rally and get that panel canceled. And now they want to exact some kind of revenge. Now, I can't point you to a source on that. And I'm not saying that's even necessarily the motivation for everyone on this. I'm just saying this is what I'm hearing from people I know in the PCA, that they think that that's what's motivating what's currently happening. So that brings us to this. And I wasn't going to cover this. I didn't actually think it was a big deal enough to cover, but I'm realizing more and more it probably is. So this was June 5th. A statement came out from Grimke Seminary. And the statement, to summarize, says that they are going to collaborate with people that they don't always necessarily agree with on everything. And that they've done this with a number of institutions. They have a wide number of institutions that they will collaborate with. Now, you know, of course, these are all Christian institutions. And Canon Press is one of them. So is American Reformer. But along with, you know, all sorts of other organizations in there, including Christianity Today, Nine Marks, and the Gospel Coalition. So you got some organizations that, you know, I certainly would not partner with that are part of this lineup. And they say that it doesn't mean that we don't, you know, we put our stamp of approval on the entire organization just because we've partnered with them in some way. But we still, yeah, think it's okay to partner. That's basically the statement. I'll just read the last line here. This, let's see here. Okay. Grimke Seminary is committed to resisting unnecessary tribalism for the sake of the truth, the health of the church, and the glory of God. And we will continue to serve alongside any church or organization in service of equipping pastors and leaders for local church ministry. So that's their stance. Okay. So they take a principled stance. Now, why do they have to take this stance to begin with? Well, I'm going to show you a few things, but you might think to yourself, well, this isn't a lot. And I'll just say it doesn't seem like a lot. There's some social media pressure against them for partnering with a certain organization. Much of the pressure, though, isn't, it's like an iceberg. You see stuff on Twitter sometimes. Sometimes it might be nothing, but sometimes there's a lot of phone calls, emails, and conversations happening behind the scenes that are vastly more important than what you're seeing on social media. And I think this is one of those times. Remember, they were forced into having to make a statement to defend what they were doing, and the organization, of course, is American Reformer. They were put into a position where they had to defend a partnership with American Reformer, and it's very loose partnership, to be quite honest. It comes down to this. At the PCA General Assembly, which is next week, American Reformer and Grimke Seminary had events, and these events coincided with one another. And rather than have conflicting events, so people had to choose, and they made the decision together to share resources, to share a space, and to share hors d'oeuvres, drinks, those kinds of things. Or, you know, these cost money, right? And they're going to have a joint reception. It doesn't mean they have any speakers there who are going to address everyone. It doesn't mean that there's a certain position there promoting or a book or anything other than these two organizations are going to be together in the same place. And you can meet people. You can meet faculty from Grimke Seminary. You can meet people that work for American Reformer. That's it. That's all it was. Well, Stephen Wolfe, who wrote The Case for Christian Nationalism, if you don't know who that is, he is a figure that is somewhat has been considered now controversial in the broader evangelical world. He tweeted out on X that he was going to attend this event or was planning on it. I don't know if he will go, but that's what he said. And this caused, I think that's the genesis of where this thing started. Just his attendance, his mere attendance became I'll show you a few things. I'll show you a little bit what I'm talking about, at least the publicly available stuff. So starting here, we have Evan Robinson. Evan Robinson, who is on staff at a PCA church, and he says that Grimke Seminary, you are making a mistake by including Canon Press and American Reformer as trustworthy resources. They're not trustworthy, and they teach things that are contrary to the gospel. Now, that is a serious charge, by the way, including evil rationales for slavery. Now, I want to point out something very, very important in my mind, but you might think it's very small, that because they have supposedly, and this is allegedly, okay, because they allegedly might have a different perspective on slavery, and I'm not even saying what it is, but they just have a different ethical perspective. They are now teaching things contrary to the gospel. This is a problem. And this is, I think, the heart of the woke error in Christianity, is this attempt to fuse egalitarian, social justice type views with the gospel. So that if you deny those egalitarian things in some way, or those social justice things, or you don't think a certain labor relationship or social arrangement is as bad as a liberal might think it is, you end up becoming a pariah. And not just a pariah because you have an ethical view, but you end up becoming a heretic because you've now denied the gospel. And I'm just here to say, an ethical disagreement on a social issue, and I'm saying a basic ethical disagreement, does not automatically make someone a gospel-denying heretic. Now, there could be ethical disagreements. We just talked about David French a little bit, where you're denying certain things in the created order. And they're very serious, actually. But when you're talking about a different understanding of what the Bible teaches on something the Bible speaks to, and you're grappling with what does Scripture say about this ethical thing, and you're not contradicting the created order, you're not going against, you know, very fundamental things that God has designed and said are good, but you're trying to understand and apply to the best of your ability what God actually does say about a social issue, that doesn't mean that you don't have the gospel, right? You can still be wrong about something like that too and still have the gospel. The gospel is the good news that Jesus Christ came and took our sins, and it's really about his work. It's not about our works. And so I want to point that out. Maybe I'm belaboring the point, but this is a big problem. And you have people like this in the denomination who are serving in pastoral capacities. And that's a problem. And of course, you know, you had people who liked this tweet. And, you know, Samuel Perry, who contributed to Time Magazine and, you know, writes against Christian nationalism. He's in the SBC. He's not in the PCA, but he's a big, I would say he's somewhat of a mover and shaker in evangelicalism. And of course, he likes this, which, you know, just tells me where he's at, where his theology is at, if he agrees with this. You have a guy named Lamont English, who also liked this. And so I want to talk about Lamont English, especially as we move forward, because that's going to be very key to what's happening with Zach Garris. But yeah, of course, Samuel Perry made his own statement about Grimke Seminary partnering with American Reformer to have a joint reception. And he said, it's pretty clear that what American Reformer gets out of its association with Grimke Seminary is legitimacy, the appearance of being mainstream, nothing but mere Orthodox Christianity here. What's more disappointing to think about is what Grimke gets, the dynamism of identitarian populism. So he's just smearing both of them. He's saying Grimke Seminary is getting something out of this. They're populist now. It's so bad. And American Reformer gets credibility. And, you know, maybe it's worth just saying, reminding people, Grimke Seminary is named after a slave, right? Someone who was in slavery at one point. And Grimke Seminary, I'll say this. I'm impressed that they stuck to their guns on this, and good for them. I'm somewhat surprised, and I don't know a lot about Grimke Seminary. I'm just not used to seeing this kind of courage, and I just didn't see it happening. So good for them. All right, let's just go over a few more of the things that were being said. You have this gentleman, Professor Charles. I don't know, but he said, as a concerned presbyter and concerned Richmonder, I have a few questions. Does your seminary teach that American slavery was morally permissible? This is where we start getting into the Zach Garris stuff. So Zach Garris had tweeted out that he was going to Grimke Seminary for this event. Of course, he's not speaking at the event. He's only he's already going to the PCA meeting because he is a Presbyterian pastor out in New Mexico. And so he's traveling there, and he just wants, this is one of the events he's going to go to while he's there. This is a very standard thing. It doesn't mean that he is necessarily American Reformer wasn't saying, we're glad to have Zach Garris here, as far as I can tell. Maybe they liked his tweet or something that he just said he's going, but he's just an attender. He's someone that's going to show up, and he's showing up for American Reformer and Grimke. And so then it becomes, well, you have someone in the room who has bad views, apparently, on slavery. And so does that mean you must endorse those views, I guess, if he's showing up at your meeting? And so they want to kind of turn the screw up on Grimke Seminary to disavow, to distance themselves from American Reformer. And you have David Cassidy, who had a whole tweet thread. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll just give to you what I believe the relevant bit is. David Cassidy is a PCA pastor of a large PCA church. And he said he believed that it should be sufficient grounds for Grimke to end their partnership with American Reformer in the reception. Their leaders thought otherwise. However, ironic that the PCA canceled their seminar and treated French shamefully due to objections from those who would support American Reformer. And even some of their most extreme voices, including those in the PCA like Zach Garris, who hold what might be generously described as a dangerous view on slavery. All right, so you have now PCA pastors getting involved in this. And you know, and someone pointed out, I'm glad they pointed it out, Lance Burkhard said that Cassidy was a National Partnership leader. The National Partnership was a left-wing organization within the PCA. And I don't think they exist anymore. They were, it was mostly like an organization that existed over emails, as I understand it. But this is what, and he's side B apparently. Okay. So he thinks same-sex attraction is not a sin. There you go. All right. So David Cassidy weighs in, and he ties Zach Garris to American Reformer, and then ties American Reformer to Grimke Seminary. But David French, I guess, you know, that was shameful, canceling the panel that David French was on. I think you're getting a clarifying look through tweets like this at what's really going on in the PCA, by the way. And this is my aside that I want to just say. It really is a battle for power. And it's like this in all of the denominations and organizations that are fighting social justice. It's a battle for power. At the end of the day, who's going to control where the money goes, who's hired, what kind of social stances we take, all of that. And in an organization like the PCA, a Zach Garris is a threat to the general order. Now, the conservative resistance in the PCA for the last few years, as I've been somewhat paying attention to it, seems to be coalesced around the Gospel Reformation Network. But what I've seen, and I've talked about this on the podcast many times, in the Gospel Reformation Network, is there's some good stuff, but there's also, I think, a lot of weakness. John Payne, who I think he's still running it, if I'm not mistaken, he has in the past just treated the left with such kid gloves. Even guys who legitimately are heretics, like Scott Sauls, he's treated those guys with such kid gloves and wanting to learn from them. And you know, this is the way your conservative resistance works. It's also the way on the national level the Republicans in Congress tend to work, right? They're not really a great example of what resistance looks like, and they don't seem to be after power. It's more of, I think the understanding is that we're all gentlemen here, and you have your turn, I'll have my turn, and we can get along. And yes, there's problems, but the problems generally are abstract. We don't talk about the names really behind these problems. We don't demonize them. We might demonize some positions, but we don't attach those positions in the strongest terms that we'll use to attack them to the people who are actually promoting them in the organization. A guy like Zach Garris is different. Zach Garris, and there's a few other guys, mostly younger guys, I would say, that I know of in the PCA, are they understand, I think, what the battle's really over. This is power. And there really isn't much of a gentleman's agreement that you can have with guys that are on the other side. It is a political battle, and you don't want to think in those terms in a Christian organization. And I get it. You don't want to. You want to think that you're there for ministry, and you should be. But there is a political fight going on, and it does mirror the fight that's going on in politics on a national level. So yeah, to take out a guy like Zach Garris, I mean, he's more of a threat probably long-term. He's a young guy, so he could go places, but he could be more of a threat than even some of the guys on the Gospel Reformation Network. The other Paul asks, is it possible for Garris to get off the shame train and stand his ground, or have too many mainstream church associations smell blood in the water for him to fully recover? Some people don't know what we're talking about yet, so I'm about to show you. I'll just answer the question briefly by saying, I don't think that he is, I don't think he's necessarily on the shame train. He did issue an apology, which I think I have that. If not, I'll pull it up. But I think much of this was for the sake of clarification. And it's because of how the PCA works. If you bring someone up on charges in the PCA, which that could potentially happen, why not, right? Then they are going to try to find something in the doctrine that you have violated to bring you up on those charges. We saw this with Greg Johnson, and how for many years, even people in the conservative wing treated him with such kid gloves, it seemed like. But he was brought up on charges, and this, it was a battle. It was a mess for years. And then he finally just decided to leave himself. Sometimes the process is the punishment. So if you can put out a clear statement denying whatever the charges are in no uncertain terms, then I think it prevents those charges from potentially being brought or if they are brought, that they might not be received at the presbytery level. So that's my assumption. I think that the statement he put out was more to clarify than it was. I don't think that he's admitting that he's wrong about so many of the things that he said. I know many of you are wondering what I'm talking about. Some of you know, but I wanted to answer that question since I saw it, and I'd probably forget about it if I didn't. So let's get into, just real quick. It's a few more things on the whole Grimke event with American Reformer. We have there's a lot of stuff like this, who cares what this guy thinks, right? This is representative in my mind of some of the guys who are going after Grimke, right? Ray Whitlock, confessionally woke, right? That's his title on X. He's Presbyterian. And it even has his pronouns, right? Which I automatically tend to dismiss people. I just do, who have their pronouns on these social issues, just because it's like, man, you're already capitulating when you start doing that. But he was against what Grimke did, and of course he's written for the Aquila Report on the PCA, and so you have guys like that. Now here's what happened, right? Let's get to the Zach Garris stuff here. This is, people are wondering what happened. I know one of the tweets in this threads was deleted. So here's the full thing. This is really it on this particular screen. Okay. Zach Garris, he's getting tired. He's getting fed up that this event is being attacked. And a guy who attacked it, this event that Grimke, this reception that Grimke is hosting with American Reformer, this guy named Lamont English decided to go after it. And he says, I agree with Reverend Charles here, not super excited about being in Richmond at the PCA General Assembly with a bunch of Christian nationalists, some who believe American chattel slavery was justified. Interesting. So Zach, I think, had enough. Zach said, uh-oh, he's sarcastic. There's going to be people who reference Bible verses at the Grimke event. People who reference Bible verses, right? So this is the distinction between, defending slavery, as we are often told, people like Zach, and, I get the same charge, and it's like, if you're not getting that charge at this point, you must be doing something wrong. But this is the distinction between whatever that is and defending the Bible's teachings about or concerning slave master relationships or slavery. They're different. Defending what the Bible's teaching on these things is different than just blank slate defending as an open idea slavery, okay? But, and that's what Zach's getting at here. Zach is saying there's people there who might quote Bible verses. Yeah, and maybe there's people here who have believed, like him, that the Bible has something to say about this topic, and we've tried to understand it and apply it to the best of our ability. And that's all he thinks he's guilty of, right? And so the charge here, he's saying, is not matching what he actually believes. That's really what that behind the scene, or underneath this, since I've been watching these kind of debates, that's what's going on. So then this sparks a whole back and forth. Lamont English, brother, allow me to ask you two questions then. Is interracial marriage sinful? Right. So we're introducing now a different ethical question. And then, was American chattel slavery absolutely sinful? That's phrased intentionally that way. Because if it's absolutely sinful in every respect, at every level, every stage, every place, then anyone who participated then would be what? They'd be in sin. And that would include many Presbyterian heroes. That would include people like Jonathan Edwards, right? And we're about to find out what Lamont English thinks of Jonathan Edwards. It would include, people like Robert Louis Dabney. It would include, though, not just Presbyterians, it would include like the founding fathers. It's the basis upon which I think that much of American history has been lobotomized. And it's the springboard upon which other egalitarian questions have been foisted upon us, and to the demonization of traditional American heroes. So Zach says no. He says no to the second question. So he just doesn't even talk about the first one because, what does that have to do with anything? But no to the second question. The majority of American Presbyterians said no, it's possible to be anti-slavery and reject abolitionism. Let me read that again. It is possible to be anti-slavery so against slavery, and also reject abolitionism. This is a possible position to hold. This is something I've been saying for a long time, but it's rare for people to understand. Some people do understand it, but it's rare for those who are on the cancel culture trained to understand this position. Do you think Israel's chattel slavery of foreigners was absolutely sinful? He asks. And if you remember, Israel's chattel slavery of foreigners could be perpetual, right? So you could have people who are born into slavery and they remain in slavery and their children are slaves. And this was not against God's law. Now, if you were Jewish, that wasn't the case. There was a year of Jubilee. But for foreigners in this predicament, or even foreigners who were captured in war and that kind of thing, and maybe that was mercy. They weren't going to be killed. They became slaves. This is at least on some levels a parallel. Now, I've been convinced that I need to do a longer series of videos, or maybe one long video, on the topic of slavery and American slavery in particular. I've done some stuff in the past, but I have extensive notes and I haven't done a podcast on it. And I have decided in the midst of this that I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it soon. I am planning on doing it this month. And if you are a patron, you will get exclusive access to that. So patreon.com/worldviewconversation. That's where you find me. And I'm going to release it to the patrons first and just see what they think. Cause I know this is it's a sensitive topic, of course. And I want to make sure that not just the information's right, but the way it's communicated is to the best of my ability, my limited ability that I have. But kind of rolling back into this conversation, what we're watching here, this idea that you could be against slavery, that you don't want slavery, but also against abolitionism, was a very common idea. And some of the ethics that went into this for Christians were sourced from scripture, including the Old Testament. You have a pagan slave system in the New Testament, in some respects much worse than anything that you saw really in the American South. I mean, they didn't have gladiatorial arenas, right, in Alabama, right? You did in the Roman world. But you also had a system that God regulated in the Old Testament, and that's what Zach Garris is asking about. So these specific features that Lamont English brings out, that American chattel slavery, some of those features are also similar or reflected in ancient Israel's chattel slavery. So Lamont English then responds. He says, "Hold on, brother. I'm asking about American chattel slavery, right?" And this is where you see so often these guys trying to say that ancient slavery, Roman slavery, but certainly Jewish slavery, it wasn't even slavery. It wasn't even really slavery. The only bad kind of slavery was America. it was a handful of places where the West was involved in the age of colonialism. The slavery of the Old Testament, it's not even really slavery. It's just, now they try to downplay it. They try to redefine it. They try to emphasize certain things to just really, and I get it. This is an apologetics issue, which is one of the reasons I need to do this, because I have yet to see good Christian apologists address this accurately. And you get reamed out by atheists when you start doing that, because they know it's not true. They know what you're doing, and you're trying to redefine or minimize something that, so it's best if we're just honest with what the Word of God says, I think, on these topics. Just go with what God says on this. He's perfect. He's righteous. And sure, there are situations that existed in ancient times that do not exist now. There's certain conditions that are different that would lead us to have different arrangements in certain ways. I think of even polygamy, for example, being somewhat tolerated and regulated in the law. And then you see in our context, we've, through centuries of development, I must say, in the West and Christian influence, we have actually, we have a more restrictive standard. Now, unfortunately, now we're going into homosexual marriage and stuff like that, which isn't marriage, but we've limited it to two people. That's actually, I think, a good thing. That's an advance in many ways. That is, and having laws that are suited to a culture that will follow them is good. If you can have a law that it's one man and one woman, that's great, right? And I don't want this to be about polygamy. That's not the point of this podcast. God's original design was one man and one woman. And I believe that should be reflected in our laws. But you look at ancient Israel, you look at Nathan coming to David and saying, hey, if you didn't sin against the Lord, Lord would have blessed you with more wives. And that kind of, you have verses like that. What do you do? What do you do with that? So slavery, in my mind, is somewhat similar in the sense that you have these conditions on the ground when the law of God is applied. And when you're looking at the actual conditions, how do you come up with the best possible scenario for your society? There's going to be some laws that if they were implemented even today, like if we made a law, I'm trying to think of a good example. It's hard for me in the moment. Anti-blasphemy law, for example. Like I agree in theory, we do have blasphemy laws. They're just not against God. But if you did implement a blasphemy law and you were unable to enforce it and you're in a society that constantly does it, then it promotes disrespect for the law. So there's a lot of prudence and wisdom, I think, that goes into these kinds of things. Back to the slavery thing, though. There's no nuance in Lamont English. This isn't an honest conversation about conditions in the Old Testament versus today or anything like that. It's really just, I want to get Zach to say the bad words, to say the thing you're not supposed to say. He says, I'm asking about American chattel slavery. Don't switch it on me, Zach. Don't try to apply principles from the Old Testament to this. I'm talking about American chattel slavery, he says. And then he says, in your view, as a PCA pastor, was American slavery 100% wrong, sinful, and not permissible? Now, again, this is, what do you mean by that? At every stage, in every place? Are you talking about the Middle Passage? Are you talking about after the institution had been inherited for generations and people who, Robert E. Lee, inherited his slaves, and it was just sinful to have that, to take, I mean, what was he going to do? Free them into poverty where they couldn't protect themselves? Like, this is such a sloppy question. So Zach says, I just told you the position of most Presbyterians, and this is the one I agree with. He says they opposed abuses. So they opposed abuses in slavery, and they wanted to get rid of slavery, but they rejected abolitionism because of the Bible's teaching. So that's a great answer. That's the historic answer. That is trying to be faithful to what Scripture says on this topic and opposing slavery, but also saying that the immediate abolitionists were not a group to emulate. Maybe they were mostly heretics. They were irresponsible. They did not want compensated. They don't want the kind of integration and compensation that would have been necessary. It would have been a bad situation for the slaves who were immediately freed into a world that they really didn't have any tools to be able to navigate. I mean, it's just not even taking into consideration any of the social or economic factors that were at play in those times. Lamont English then says, I'd like to be absolutely clear as to what you're saying. No, he wasn't. He wants Zach to say the bad words. Here, as I don't want to read you wrongly, you're saying that your position is no, American chattel slavery was not 100% wrong or sinful. Am I correct? Per the ninth commandment, I want to ready you in truth. So he may just be ignorant. He may just be like thinking such cartoon, in such a cartoonish way about history that when he asks a question like that, he's not thinking through how complicated of a topic he's opening up. So like, what would be a better question for him to ask? Probably like, hey, do you think it is sinful, a master-slave relationship is sinful in all cases? Or he could have asked, do you think that when the Bible condemns things like man capture and there are elements of man capture in the Middle Passage, like, slaves in Africa and taking the way that slaves were sourced, do you think that's sinful? Or do you think that the fact that slavery wasn't regulated to the extent it should have been, the way that the Old Testament regulates slavery, do you think that's wrong? Or do you think that it was a good or a bad, in general, from a bird's eye view, moral practice to have? Like, these are all better questions, but he wants to get Zach on, get him on the record as saying, no, American chattel slavery was not 100% wrong. And so Zach says, I'm saying the Bible does not condemn chattel slavery per se, and therefore neither can we, as most Presbyterians held. There it is. There it is, right there. That's what all the brouhaha is really about. It's that tweet. The Bible does not condemn chattel slavery per se, And that per se is very important, and therefore neither can we, as most Presbyterians held. Do you think Israel's chattel slavery was per se was wrong? Now, as far as I know, Lamont English didn't answer this, but then all sorts of people start jumping in, right? And Zach tries to clarify, I'm stating the position of almost the entire old school, including the North, old school Presbyterians, and he is. Northern Presbyterians changed their views, but in, you know, the old school, new school debates when those first happened, yeah, the old school, even in the North, most of them would have agreed with what Zach's saying. So there you go. That's the controversy. That's where this whole thing really originated was. And maybe this was foolish, maybe, you know, whatever, you know, who knows? It's Twitter. It's X. It's a forum for sure. The characters are limited. We're not having long conversations. I've been going 43 minutes already. Zach's writing a sentence, right? And you have this guy hammering him. He answers the guy's questions. And then finally he says something that fits into the what you're not supposed to say, right? So that's what happened. And, you know, notice what he's not saying, though. He's not saying that the Bible approves of every aspect of American slavery, or that, you know, the Bible doesn't have regulations that should have been followed closer, or that slavery in itself is a good. He's not saying any of that stuff. He's just saying you can't, with a wide net, just say that all forms of slavery, and he's specifically talking about Israel's slavery here, things that we should condemn, because you have scripture regulating some of these things, and God seemed to assume that the patriarchs and many of the people that even wrote the Bible and that we read about in the Bible were not in sin per se. I think that's a reasonable position, but that is not for the Twitter mob. All right, so a few things I wanted to point out here, and this is very important for the purposes of this podcast, and I think you need to know where this is coming from. If the PCA wants to escape some of the errors that they made during and up to the woke controversies in 2020, they're going to need to realize that those issues are still with us. And I've said this many times in many organizations. The woke movement is not gone. It hasn't settled down necessarily. It is in an institutional phase. It is drilling down deeper into these institutions into which it already has a handle. You know why there's not streets being burned and, you know, the woke war seems like it? Well, because they won. They won. And in most of these institutions, there were precedents set and hires made of people who are now implementing those things at deeper levels. There are a few institutions that are taking the kind of measures that need to be taken to root out what they previously had adopted. So this is a good, good example of it. And I want you to see this for what it is, because the PCA is reaping what it has sown with this kind of a thing. Check it out. This guy, Lamont English, right? I think it's fair to say he's woke, all right? Here's a picture of him. I'm not sure exactly when this is from. This is going around X, but he's got the black fist, all right, pro-black on his t-shirt. And you might say, well, he can wear whatever t-shirt he wants. Well, this is the title. At church to worship and learn about God, who doesn't ask me to deny, diminish, or leave my blackness at the door, but encourages me to be who he has created me to be in Christ in my fullness. And then there's a black fist. This is at a church. This is a person who is either before or after the service. This is how he dressed in church. And he's not just maybe he is attending the church. I'm not sure, but this is someone who actually works for the PCA. This is the person that Zach was going back and forth with. This is the person who was asking Zach these questions, who was trying to get Zach to say something that would impugn himself. And this is, you know, does this represent the PCA? That's what I want to ask. Is this the kind of thing that the PCA, the kind of person the PCA hires? And this is what they want being seen at their church as representatives of their denomination. This is a question you need to ask. Now, here's a number of things from just views that Lamont English holds. You know, MLK he pursued biblical social justice, right? We've talked about MLK before. Go look at my shows on MLK. Tucker Carlson and Don Lemon are gone from Fox News and CNN. Hopefully this helps bring a little more civility in public discourse and a little less racism, sexism, and progressivism on TV. Well, so reasonable. Yeah, Tucker Carlson was fired, and I guess he's racist and sexist. He says, a Christian baker can refuse to create a cake for a same-sex couple, but Twitter can't refuse its platform to dangerous, racist, misogynistic, and a treasonous president. Republicans and conservatives, your hypocrisy is showing. So this is around the time that Trump was booted off Twitter that he said this. So he was for Trump being booted off the social media platform, and conservatives defending him are defending a racist misogynist, and he should be booted off, right? This is a woke guy, guys. People still influenced by Edwards and Dabney, sadly, he says. And people, I guess, shouldn't be influenced by Jonathan Edwards or Robert Louis Dabney. There goes your Presbyterian history. So many within white evangelical and reform spaces talk about how the church is becoming liberal. Funny. It was they who were theologically liberal for hundreds of years by denying the clear commands of pursuing justice and misusing scripture to justify demonic racism. And I've said this many times. If you have the view that the church has been horrible, just sinful, riddled with sin for centuries, and you're the first enlightened ones to come along and finally bring a biblical corrective and say, we are the true followers of God, and for centuries before us, they did not follow God. You made a great argument for never joining your organization. That's like the Klan saying, you know, we've turned over a new leaf. Why would you join them? If you can do things, if you want to be an activist in the Democrat Party then. Why would I join? You know, all the leftists are going to leave eventually. It's an off-ramp from the church is what I'm trying to say. Why would leftists stick around? You know, unless maybe it's to wield some power themselves or something, but have a job. I don't know. But, you know, you can't get the same kinds of things done. You're going to be limited with all these horrible conservatives that still are around because of our horrible racist history. And you're obviously condemning the traditional people who love your denomination. They can't have anything to be proud of in the denomination. You have to now root out all the and be suspicious about all the traditions and the symbols and you know, everything that was there. It's like J.D. Greer getting rid of the Brodus gavel. We got to get rid of this gavel that was over the meetings because we can't respect that guy because he had slaves, right? That's the direction that you go with this stuff. So they hired a woke guy. Where did they hire him? Oh, they hired him for MFW. And this is the PCA's Global Missions Organization. And he is assistant director of that particular organization. It's a global mission sending agency, the Presbyterian Church in America. And the interesting thing about this is not only does he work for the MFW in that capacity, he's also the assistant director of Mission to the World. He's assistant director of Mission to the World's West Coast Hub and the National Diversity Mobilization Specialist. There you go. Anthony English, that's how he goes. That's his, I guess, actual name. He is the National Diversity Mobilization Specialist. That's the person that is getting Zach Garris in trouble right now. And on the page that on the website for Mission to the World that talks about the features Anthony English as the National Diversity Mobilization Specialist, we have this diversity and missions, and I'm just going to read it for you. At MTW, we believe that sending more diverse missionaries better reflects the image of God. Wow. And helps build more effective ministry as people of color bring their voices and gospel stories to those waiting to hear. If you would like more info about how MTW Diversity Initiative and the Reformed and Diversity Delegates can help you in your mission, please contact one of your diversity mobilizers. Wow, you got people that are diversity mobilizers in the PCA. Well, why is it so important to raise up diversity missionaries? This is what the website says. We believe diversity in our community more accurately reflects the kingdom of God. Revelation 9:7-9 leverages the unique perspectives, experiences, competencies, and gifts that people of color bring to our teams. Romans 12, 1 Corinthians 12 is a power apologetic to the global nature of our faith and the reconciliation power of the gospel to break down walls of hostility between people. Ephesians 2, and is consistent with the Presbyterian Church in America's report on racial reconciliation and its recommendations. So there's a report on racial reconciliation, and they made some recommendations, and here you go. That's what you get now. You have hires like this, working for organizations like this that are funded by the conservative PCA. And of course, they're going to be in conflict with your conservative pastors. you did this though. And I don't mean you if you're someone who voted against it, but you're in the PCA and you thought this was just a great thing that we're coming together as the body of Christ and we don't want to be racist. You did this kind of thing to yourself. There's not much more to say, but these scriptures are, of course, are all ripped out of context and misused. And this would be a foreign idea to just about everyone who's big in the PCA or just Presbyterian Church from antiquity. Embracing the Imago Dei, right? If the past few years we at MTW have been asking, how do we better serve all our brothers and sisters in our church who seek to serve as missionaries? How can we better come alongside all our churches who want to send their members for missions to reach a world desperately that needs Christ? We've been listening to our Hispanic, African-American, and Asian-American brothers and sisters, many of whom serve as advisors, representatives, and champions of missions. With their guidance, we've been changing, learning, adapting, and repenting. The Lord must first change hearts, but we can work to change our processes, trainings, language, and practices to ensure that we are serving our whole church well. This is on the website right now at MTW. This is happening right now in your denomination, PCA. You guys brought this in, and now it's wreaking havoc, and it will continue to wreak havoc. And this is your own DEI initiative right in your organization. Anthony English is the Assistant Director of Mission to the World West Coast Hub and National Diversity Mobilizer. He is currently enrolled at Birmingham Theological Seminary, where he's pursuing a Master's of Arts in Public Theology. He likes evangelism, apologetics, as well as helping Christians of color find their place in what God is doing among the nations. Imagine you had someone, I'm just curious, you know, if you had a guy that's like, who's white and he's like, you know, he really has a heart for evangelism, apologetics, and he loves helping white people find their place. Like, obviously wouldn't fly, right? It would be horrible. That would be like worse than Zach Garris. But this, here you go. This is happening in the PCA. And this is why you have takes like this. From Lamont English, I was shocked, he says, by this interaction last night with a PCA TE, teaching elder. How one can be an ordained teaching elder in the PCA and believe American slavery was not 100% sinful and wrong biblically is beyond me. Interactions like this is one reason why so many people of color are hesitant to join Reformed churches. So there you weaponize it. And you say, unless this is what's being said, you got to root out Zach Garris, because if you don't root out Zach Garris, then you're going to not have people of color. If you want to open your doors and include people of color, you want that, right? You don't want to be racist, right? You got to get rid of Zach. That's what's going on. That's exactly the play. And it's the play that we're pretty used to seeing. And you need to understand what is happening here. Whether you agree or disagree with Zach is honestly irrelevant to me, because the issue is something bigger than that. The issue is, do you allow people like this? Do you allow initiatives like this to control your denomination? Are you going to allow DEI initiatives and the people who work for them control your denomination and set the agenda and tell you who is acceptable and who is not? And I'll tell you what, if they bring charges against Zach Garris for this, then shameful. And this is the train it's running on. They are in league with that woke spirit. And I don't care how conservative their bona fides are, they're carrying the water for that woke spirit that still exists and is in an institutional phase in our denominations, including the PCA. Now, I want to just mention this real quick too. There's a guy named David Cassidy. And, you know, I thought when I first heard that, I was like, haven't I heard about David Cassidy? You know, that's the 70s pop singer, David Cassidy. This is a different David Cassidy. He looks a lot different. Yeah. And, you know, he is a pastor of a big church, Spanish River Church in Florida. It's a Presbyterian PCA church. And I just want to point this out, because these are the guys who, well, they're the kind of guys that are going to carry the water. You know, they're not, how do I say this nicely? They're ignorant. They're not that informed. They're maybe low information participants in a discussion like this. And I don't know to what extent they make up the leadership of the PCA. That I would be curious, because I think that's going to determine what happens with cases like this. So he tweets out a screenshot of Zach, and it's Zach's apology, which I'm about to read for you. I will pull it up. And then Zach's interaction that I just read for you. And in Zach's interaction that I just read for you, Zach talks about abolitionism, that he's against abolitionism. Well, in his apology, he says basically that abolishing slavery is a good thing. David Cassidy doesn't seem to know, and this is the problem we have, the difference between those two, abolitionism as a movement historically, and then wanting slavery to be abolished. There were a number of gradual emancipationists and people who wanted slavery abolished, but did not want to do it in an irresponsible or careless manner that would damage or hurt slaves and also cause problems economically for everyone, so forth and so on. There were people like that, and also people who didn't think it was on the scale of murder, where this is a level 10 sin that's happening right now that means to be ended no matter what the consequences. They thought that actually gradually approaching this in a way that maybe included things like integrating into society, or some wanted a colonization effort like Liberia was, or a way to compensate the masters who had purchased these slaves from the North, and the ship owners who brought them here were Northern primarily. They wanted a better plan, and that was denied them. That was denied, and it ended in the worst possible way it probably could have, in war-torn conditions and in poverty. And you had some historians think about a million got sick and starved, a million slaves after the war. Good job, right? So it's a respectable position to say this could have been handled differently. Not for these guys, though. It's a cartoon of history. And when they're the ones making the decisions, guys like Zach, who are thinking a lot deeper about this, who understand the issue much better, both the theology and the history, they're at an extreme disadvantage, because they are up against people who have been either indoctrinated or are just ignorant. They don't understand these issues, and they're trying to apply moral principles that they don't even seem to quite understand to an issue that they understand less. And that's my nice way of putting it. All right, I'll take questions in a moment, but I need to read Zach's apology here. So let me see if I can pull it up, because I don't think I had it on my slideshow that I prepared for you here. Let's see here. All right. So here's what Zach said, and I will show it, I'll display it so you can see. In response to a question a few days ago about America's history of slavery, I gave a brief answer that I hoped would express my biblical anti-slavery position. There you go. Biblical anti-slavery, not abolitionism, but a biblical anti-slavery position, two different things. I recognize that I was insufficiently clear in how I addressed the matter. I sincerely regret and apologize for not being more sensitive in how I answered the question on this platform. I mean, I think at this point, Zach is just bending over backwards, to be honest. He probably doesn't need to say this, but he is giving the benefit of the doubt that I wouldn't give. To clarify, he says, I believe without qualification that God's word clearly condemns man stealing and selling stolen men as gross and abominable sins worthy of the death penalty. Absolutely. Even Robert Louis Dabney thought it was an iniquitous traffic, okay? So this isn't really news to anyone. He's not contradicting anything he said. The doctrinal standard of my denomination, the PCA, expressed this biblical truth most clearly in Westminster Larger Catechism 142, which properly identifies man-stealing and receiving anything that is stolen as violations of the Eighth Commandment, you shall not steal. It follows that the transatlantic slave trade and participation in it in our nation's history are clear violations of the Eighth Commandment and wicked, grievously sinful practices of which we should be ashamed. And there's nothing here I disagree with, by the way, for people who also would make these charges against me. I've said basically the same thing. I have never held or said otherwise. The American system of slavery that resulted from the slave trade also involved abuses of slaves, including physical and sexual abuse, splitting up families, and the lack of education and religious instruction of slaves. Now, the question is, he doesn't go into this, but to what extent, how prevalent were these things, right? The woke mob wants to make it that's the only thing that ever happened in slavery, right? And that's why I need to do a longer thing on the conditions and all of that. But yeah, these things did happen. There, every institution, by the way, I should say, also had some institutions are worse than others. But if you looked at our labor relationships today, can we say that they're all above board? Abuse isn't happening? Of course it is. So Anyway, all that to say, for those who are freaked out that Zach is like doing a 180, he's not doing a 180. This is all compatible. There's nothing, he's not contradicting anything else he said. He says, I think it was good and proper and godly for American Christians living with the realities of their time to seek to end the slave system as a whole. That's key there, but by the way, too, the slave system as a whole. So he's not saying carelessly and in a very irresponsible way, immediately end it without thinking through the consequences. And he's not saying that, individual slaves should have been freed irrespective of their situation and like in a John Brown kind of way, you know, leading insurrections and stuff. He's saying the whole system as a whole should have ended, should have phased out. He says, let's see here. Seek to free any slaves inherited or otherwise received. Seek to confront, correct, and discipline particular abuses of slaves and call for masters to free their slaves. Insofar as American Christians have failed to seek the abolitionment of all forms of slavery, historical and modern, they have fallen far short of the standard of righteousness to which each and all of us are called. That last sentence, I'm not exactly sure what he means by that. I'll be honest. That's the only part of this whole thing that I think to say like we would prefer freedom. We would prefer self-government. We would prefer every man to be responsible and to lead his family and to not be under the thumb of someone else. In fact, I'll say this, I would prefer, and I know this is not possible in our economy. Many of you are, this isn't an option for you, but I would prefer that like everyone was self-employed. Or at least we could get back to a situation where like families own businesses and that kind of thing. These mega corporations, I think it's bad, right? So I have my own critique of like, and maybe people in a few hundred years are going to look back in horror that we had these impersonal corporations that even use slave labor from other countries in some cases, sweatshop labor, and you know, phones that are created with slave labor in Africa today. Basically, I mean, these people are impoverished that are working for the Chinese government trying to find minerals and things to put in these phones and batteries. And, you know, maybe we're going to look back in horror at all of this. Maybe we're going to say, what in the world, what was so messed up about our labor relationships? Why didn't we look in scripture and see, we don't see corporations in there. We don't see this. Maybe we will. Maybe we will look at that. Maybe we will take the microscope out. Am I going to be condemned because I frequented establishments that were owned by corporations or had corporate goods? Right. When you start thinking in the perspective of your own time and the things that you have, the debate starts to make a little more sense. The welfare system we have, the prison system we have, right? Generational welfare with not even the dignity of work. Slavery in prison, that's, your life sentences. And I mean, it's hopeless. It's terrible. That's not biblical either, right? You can't find precedents for this kind of thing. Justice should be swift. It's horrible. Maybe in a few hundred years, we'll look back and think that. But we live in today. And how are you salt and light in today where you are? That is the question. And if you inherited slaves, if you lived in those times, you have a lot of decisions to weigh, including if I free them, am I able to, first of all, is it even possible? And if I can, will they be able to take care of themselves and thrive? These are just some of the questions that have to be asked. And hardly anyone wants to do that work. They just want the cartoon. And that's what I think Zach's statement is it doesn't contradict what he has said before at all. And it's an attempt to show, it really points out these people who are trying to cancel him, how ignorant they truly are, that they even think this is a contradiction and that kind of thing. So that is, let's see, was there anything else? Oh, yes. Yes, there was something else. Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. I noticed this, that the Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood published yesterday, if you can believe it, on the 7th of June, an article by Zach Garrison, there it is, on the state of complementarianism in the PCA. Wayback Machine still has it up, at least the screenshot of the front page shows that it was there, not even 24 hours ago. If you type in DuckDuckGo, the CBMW, Zach Garrison on the state of complementarianism, it comes right up, says 2 days ago. There it is. If you go to that website today, this is what you will find on the 8th. Where is it? It is nowhere to be found. There is an article by Emma Waters on feminism right next to the one, or right where the one that of Zach Garris was. Interesting. Now, these are the board of directors and the staff for the Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. And you got some guys that, but Lincoln Duncan, Danny Aiken. I mean, these have been featured on this podcast before for their, I'll just say, woke affinities. But the people who actually, the staff, the people who actually run the show would be Denny Burke, who is the president of the Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. That's the president. And Colin Smothers, the executive director. These are the two guys that would have been part, I'd assume, if it works like any typical organization, of making a decision to drop Zach Garris's piece right when there was a cancel mob coming after him. And the only reason I bring it up is to say there's capitulation going on here already. You know, the smoke hasn't even cleared, and Zach hasn't really even been able to say much for himself other than this one statement, this apology statement. And really, it's apology for, the way I would phrase it is, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were that ignorant. I should have taken that into account before I used the words I did. But that's all he said. And there's a rush to condemn in so many places. And you know, there's no public anything that I know of so far about the motivations for why this piece was taken down. But a lot of conservatives trust that organization. They think it's a good conservative organization. I'm telling you, this whole thing from the beginning was driven by a cancel culture. It was driven by a social justice guy who works in effectively a DEI type mechanism within the PCA. And look how results are already coming in. Even conservatives run for the hills when the pressure is applied. Suppose conservatives. There you go. I don't know what to say. If anyone has connections to the Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, you might want to reach out to Denny Burke and Colin Smothers and say, why did you take that down? That doesn't help. In fact, that adds fuel to the fire, and it makes it look like this is a legitimate argument against Zach. And it's shameful, to be honest. If he's such a heretic, if he's such a problem, maybe they should issue their own a statement and say, you know, we apologize, because for 24 hours or however many hours the article was up there, for the day it was up there, when we promoted a heretic. Maybe they should say something like that if they really think it's a heresy. Or if they don't, maybe they should just admit that they're being weak. And that's my message for Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. All right, let's take questions, comments, and go from there. Hopefully that was clear enough. We need men of courage, man. So many people just do not have courage. And it's embarrassing, quite frankly. All right. A lot of comments. I'm looking for questions. Oh, No, that's not for me. Let's see. There's a lot of comments going back and forth. Jimmy Starfish wants to bring up Jim Hamilton of SBTS publicly smeared John Harris as a neo-Confederate and remains employed at SBTS. John is correct that wokeness hasn't left the institutions. Yeah, I mean, I think I understand this issue partially because I lived through something similar. Fortunately, I wasn't working for the SBC, or else I would have been fired. But yes, I lived through something very similar to Zach, where you have people that don't understand either the history or the ethics or both, and they just jump to conclusions and start smearing you. And I remember in that one, they were attributing quotes to me that I didn't even have, that weren't even mine, things that I had written years ago that I had quoted other people. It was just embarrassing, though, that whole thing. Maybe I'll talk about that more when we do our whole episode or series of episodes on American slavery to help Christian apologists navigate this much better. Because look, I've done ministry on college campuses for years, evangelism included. And slavery is one of the things that comes up immediately about your Bible condones slavery. I've had to deal with this question for a long time. And I am telling you, the way that Christian apologists are approaching this is awful. It is not, it doesn't work. And if you get a smart atheist, then you will find that out real quick. Okay, there's really not a lot of questions here. Let me just end with this. I want to read for you something from a slavery debate. And this was in 1845. It was on the topic of whether slaveholding was in itself sinful and the relationship between master and slave a sinful relation. That was the proposition. And it featured two Presbyterians. One was from Indiana, and the name was Reverend James Duncan. The other one, let's see here, Reverend James Duncan was not part of this debate. Sorry. The two people that were part of this debate was Reverend James J. Blanchard, and Dr. N.L. Rice. Okay. You can look this up, by the way. You can go online and look up this debate, 1845 in Cincinnati, Ohio. Slaveholding in and of itself sinful, or the relationship between master and slave a sinful relation. Now, I'm going to read for you an excerpt. This is from Blanchard. Okay, Blanchard was taking the abolitionist position. This is what Zach Garris disagrees with, and this is just a little bitty, just a little bitty bit of information for those who haven't read the history on this kind of thing. He said this, this is the extent of his argument, okay? Most of his arguments about the central question of the debate comes down to this. Abolitionists take their stand upon the New Testament doctrine of the natural equity of man, the one bloodism of humankind, and upon those great principles of human rights drawn from the New Testament and announced in the American Declaration of Independence, declaring that all men have natural and inalienable rights to person, property, and the pursuit of happiness. That is the biblical argument that he brought forward, which it relies upon this this broad doctrine, this general spirit that then overrides or defines the specific particulars that the scripture has to say on this particular subject. Now, this is what the Rice said, who was opposing him. He said, "In denying that slaveholding is in itself sinful, I do not defend slavery as an institution that ought to be perpetuated. I desire to see every slave free, not nominally free, as are the colored people in Ohio." This is interesting. This is Zach's position, basically. It's a gradual emancipationist position that condition actually means more than status. The condition that someone is freed into should be considered. It's not just whether they're slave or free as a status. It's also the conditions they live under. And there's free people in Ohio that they're not slaves, but their conditions aren't good. They're not really free. And so he says that in denying that slaveholding is sinful, I do not defend slavery as an institution. That's what Zach's saying. He's saying, I'm not defending the institution. Good riddance to it. But I don't want to come down on people who inherited slaves or were involved in non-sinful ways in this as somehow evil heretics, which is exactly what the woke mob and the PCA is engaged in doing. We had centuries of compromise and heresy, and they didn't even have the gospel, probably. And finally, about 2 seconds ago, we, the enlightened ones, we know. Much more could be said. I think that's probably about all I wanted to read for you from that particular debate. If you're not familiar with the debates of the 1840s, 50s, 30s, 40s, 50s on this subject in the Presbyterian Church, that's what's really being discussed now. Are you able to hold views about those particular debates that happened a long time ago and still fall outside of the woke levels of acceptability and operate within the PCA? That's the question. So yes, it's an old debate. Why are we even arguing about it, right? This is, we don't have any chattel slaves around. What's the problem? The problem is this has been used as a pretext to cancel everyone, if you haven't noticed. And so the question then becomes, do we cancel those people? Do you want to cancel a Jonathan Edwards? You need to ask this question. And if you do, then who else? Where does it end? J. Gresham Machen, do we cancel him? He had some views on race that were not within the boundaries of respectability. Not, by the way, stepping outside the PCA, I was just reading some quotes from Charles Spurgeon the other day that might shock some of you, because he's often held up as like the model. Spurgeon is way outside of the boundaries of on some of the things he said, even race-related things. Do we take the whole man into account and everything he said and try to represent him accurately, or do we just cherry-pick that stuff and then say he's out of step with us? So we got to cancel him. That's the question being debated now. Make no mistake. So maybe a little bit of uh, brushing up on that history would help in understanding where Zach is coming from on this kind of thing. Okay, last chance for questions and then we're done. Baby update. Someone asked for, well, thank you for that. That's a nicer thing. So my wife is due on July 2nd, so less than a month. And we are doing a home birth. So I'm a little nervous about it because my brother did one. And that's the reason we're doing it, was because he had a pretty good experience. But yeah, it's scary a little bit. It's our first time, right? So and it'd be really cool because my due date was July 2nd as well with my mom. And I was born late. I was born July 12th, but my wife's due date is July 2nd. So, you know, who knows, you know, maybe we'll have the same birthday. If not, hopefully it'll be 2 days, you know, it'll be July 4th. That'd be great. And then I'm going to name him Sam and he'll be Uncle Sam. It'll be great. But yeah, that's what's happening with me. So thank you for asking that question and caring about that. And thank you for those who, by the way, have like sent me gifts and just prayed for me and stuff, and appreciate that. So we don't know if it's a boy or a girl yet, but we will find out. I thought it was really funny. I posted this on X that there's been people that I know are pro-trans, you know, transgender, and they have asked me what kind, are we having a boy or a girl? So I get a kick out of that. It's so weird, isn't it? You know, are you doing a gender reveal? Like, you don't even believe in gender. You think it's all a social construct. All right. Well, this is really good. Thank you, Betty. My daughter's had such a sweet and peaceful birth with both her daughters at home. Thank you. That's good to hear, because it's good to hear those success stories, because I know there's horror stories out there as well. More coming next week. And if I need to circle back on any of this stuff, I will. Leave questions. I'll try to look at them and maybe incorporate them into a longer discussion about slavery and American slavery and apologetics and Christianity and the Bible and Roman slavery and all of that. It's a topic I have looked into quite a bit, and it's not one I like focusing on all the time, but when you have stuff like this come up, then I think it would be helpful for you. And that's my point, is to produce information that is helpful for you. Like I said, first people to get it though are going to be patrons. And so sign up patreon.com/worldviewconversation. And you can sign up for goodness, $5 a month, you know, and you'll get access to all of that stuff. So with that, I hope you have a wonderful Lord's Day tomorrow. Worship Him in spirit and in truth. Bye now.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.